The Guardian.
During March, The Guardian's podcasts are sponsored by audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/free download to find out more.
Football Weekly Extra, on a week that's proved there's nothing better than a veteran. At Chelsea, it's once more under the bridge for club's old dogs of war. At Anfield, it's G-Force as Stevie G arrests Liverpool slide in front of Happy Cop. The pod asks, is Dimitri the new Avram Grant? And was Tuesday's Merseyside derby really the best performance by the pool since the one that Dave Richards fell into? Also today, FA Cup quarterfinals, Fiorentina, Juventus, Spanish football tax debt crisis, and weekend Premier League, plus post tweets and sundry other topics in Football Weekly Extra. Hi, everybody, and welcome to another Football Weekly Extra. God, they just keep coming, don't they? James Horncastle joins us today, making it a very special day in the pod.
Hi, Jimbo.
Hi, Jimbo yourself. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. And Amy Lawrence.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you. Amy, I have to say, listeners, she's come in even though she's sick. And when I say sick, I mean, you know, sick.
Not, all right, then. You make it sound like she's in some way depraved.
Hey.
That too, huh?
Make your own call on that. So thanks, Amy.
Yeah. Yes, in the style of Mr. Creosote, I need a bucket.
Yeah, well, that's nice. Yeah, well skirted around that issue. Good. Now, a terrific week of football every night. Just great games. There was at Emirates, the Arsenal-Newcastle thing. Then you had the Merseyside derby. And then last night, wow, at Stamford Bridge. Extraordinary, extraordinary evening of football.
Yeah, it was incredible from the perspective that, you know, really for the first 10 or 20 minutes, it didn't look like it was going to be any other result than what Napoli had done in the first leg. You know, they had two very clear goal-scoring chances, didn't take them, which is quite unusual for them, because I think if you look statistically, they're one of the most sort of ruthless sides. Cavani, I think of the five goals he'd scored, he only needed six shots. I don't know how many he had last night, but the one that he did, you know, he put it in the side netting. Hamsik and Lavezzi missed, and then Cech kind of kept them in the game for that first early period. The goal came against the run of play. It was a great header. But, I mean, Napoli were, although they were keen to give sort of credit to Chelsea for the way they performed, for the experience that they showed and how they held their nerve, you know, Matali was saying that, particularly for the first goal, it came when Maggio was injured. They were preparing the change, and that moment kind of completely changed the momentum of the tie.
Yeah, I think Ramirez doing his Chopper Harris job on Maggio was pretty much the key moment of the game. I actually was sat right next to where he cannoned into the Italian, and it, from that moment on, it looked like the whole balance had shifted, and suddenly Chelsea came alive. And you looked at this team and the spirit and everything, and you wondered, hang on, isn't this the same team that folded against West Brom?
Well, that's exactly it. After the game, John Terry said that we showed what we were really made of tonight. And they did. They showed that there are good players whose attitude in recent months has stank to the high heavens. They've been immature, they've been juvenile, petulant, spoilt. If they played even half as well against West Brom, or tried half as hard against West Brom as they did against Napoli, they'd have won the game easily rather than lost. And obviously that's Terry, when he made that comment, probably didn't mean me to interpret, or anyone else to interpret it in that way, but that's the standout sort of fact for me last night, that it just shows how risibly Chelsea's players have behaved in their attempts to get Andre Villas-Boas out of the club.
I'm not disagreeing with you totally, Barry, but I think when you say if they'd have shown the same thing against West Brom as they did against Napoli, I mean, it's not realistic, because first of all, teams going away from home and playing against West Brom are just generally not going to be as inspired as they are in a home game in the Champions League with the whole world watching and, you know, up against it. So it's a little bit facile to maybe say, you know, they should have done the same against West Brom, because footballers aren't like that. You know,
this is Amy not disagreeing with you, by the way.
They do tend to obviously find certain scenarios a little bit more motivating than others, but I too totally agree they were obviously entirely.
Well, the reason I cited the West Brom game is because it's the one Jimbo mentioned, but it could be any number of games they've played in recent months.
Well, I mentioned it because it was the same, more or less the same team that took on.
Yeah, but the other thing is that obviously the old guard of Chelsea are the ones who have, you know, come out smelling of roses and got so many plaudits last night. But I think you've got to look at some of the so-called new guard and say David Luiz, who everybody has obviously laughed at a lot this season at various points, Ramirez, who, you know, has not necessarily been absolutely the most convincing player for them. Ivanovic actually has had a very good season for Chelsea amongst a lot of players that you know, have had their reasons one way or another not to excel, and he's been pretty consistent. But those were players who did as much easily as the so-called old guard to make sure that Chelsea went through last year.
Whatever the reasons and whether this should have happened before, the fact that they are now back at that kind of level, is that something that we think is going to be a flash in the pan, or should the likes of Man City next week or Spurs in 10 days' time, their rivals for a top four finish, should they now be very, very worried indeed?
I think that's a very short-term outlook. Because, you know, it's like flashing back to 2007 last night to see on the score sheet Drogba, Terry Lampard. As Amy alluded to, it's quite encouraging to see that the sort of new blood in Luiz and Ramirez coming through. But going into that game against Manchester City, what was interesting is how Di Matteo, in a very sort of short time, has changed the style of Chelsea away from this pass it out from the back, quick transition, possession-based play. They were extremely direct last night. You look at the balls that Drogba was receiving, you know, they were all long, and Napoli didn't know really how to handle it. You know, it was a much more physical encounter than I think they experienced in the first leg. Going forward until the end of the season, I think, you know, if that works for Chelsea, and it obviously does, then, well, they're already on a run. They've won three games in a row, so... Yeah. I mean, it was hilarious at the end, and particularly throughout extra time when the cameras were flashing on the bench and there was Terry almost acting like the coach, and then when the full-time whistle, Di Matteo was behaving like a player, you know, in terms of how he jumped on everyone. And
it's hugely unusual for Terry to be acting like the coach.
It's a great win for the new manager. We're all behind him, said Di Matteo after the match. 23 kid posting that in. Very nice indeed. It does raise this whole issue. There are a lot of people commenting on John Terry's overt managerial stance on the sideline.
Yeah, it was like he was auditioning for the role, really, in many ways. But I think what is really going to be fascinating for Chelsea is obviously the remainder of the season is still very interesting to them. They've still got a lot to play for. But the summer is going to be fascinating, because what they do about the old players that certainly very recently looked like they were all going to be jettisoned fairly quickly becomes very, very interesting again. I mean, if Chelsea do push on and actually end up with a very positive end to the season, well, it's not going to be that easy to say bye-bye Drogba, bye-bye Lampard, bye-bye Terry, or, you know, even though Terry wasn't necessarily going to be going, I think, as early as perhaps some of the others. But they've definitely got some really big decisions, and you wonder whether some of these players are actually playing their way into a new contract, which in a way extends the kind of problem that Villas-Boas had such troubles trying to deal with.
It's only a problem if they don't win, of course.
Well, it's quite interesting that the players who scored last night, Drogba, Lampard and Terry, were the ones that probably AVB would have left out. And obviously Terry was injured.
Well, this is the thing. It was an extraordinary performance by Terry when you see how he was all over the field and scoring goals and then cheering the team on from the sidelines. When you think that 2 weeks ago he was out for 6 weeks. And I've even seen the suggestion today that he wasn't actually having a knee operation at all. I'm not a medical man myself, but it does seem pretty extraordinary that you could be having an operation and due to miss 6 weeks and then come back not after five, not after four, not after three, but after 2 weeks and have an absolutely standout performance.
Mm. Miraculous recovery. I mean,
so is there a suggestion then that he just didn't have an operation at all, but told Andre, frankly, I don't fancy it, you sort yourself out?
It'd be quite interesting to see, you know, what the physio's justification was for recommending that.
He's England's brave John Terry. I think that's the...
Give him the armband back.
Yeah, just a couple of things on the whole managerial thing. Some people, as I say, mentioning the change around after Mourinho when Avram Grant came in, and the, by all accounts, the team pretty much ran itself all the way to a Champions League final, which is, you know, possibly similar to what we're seeing here, although you're mentioning a direct change in the tactics which have been employed.
Yeah, whether that's enforced by Di Matteo or not, I don't know.
Jabinger Will says, do Chelsea even need a manager? Players seem to be able to do a better job. Johnny Late, given new manager JT's performances, RDM basically a teddy bear strapped to the front of the Chelsea juggernaut. Interesting image there. A couple of things I was curious about. I've sat behind Matt Sarri, which is tremendously exciting, and what a star that man is. One thing I really enjoyed about him was that the evening obviously didn't go his way, but he maintained that smile, that kind of almost ironic smile, as though he was... You know, he knew his part in the spectacle, and I think that's why the team possibly play generally, perhaps not so much last night, but without the same kind of paranoia that you see in a lot of Italian teams in Europe. I couldn't really see a couple of things which I really wanted to know about. One was, there was a moment when De Sanctis came out for a ball, missed it completely, and it fell to Torres with the goal open wide, and then people stood up, couldn't see what happened, but I kind of knew what was going to happen, and it did. How bad was that miss?
I don't think it was that bad.
Was it not?
I think it was a tough chance.
The goal was open.
The damning statistic was that after 86 minutes, that time was marked that Torres has gone 24 hours without a goal.
Yeah.
Should he call it a day?
The other thing I was curious about, a lot of people tweeting about this on Thursday morning, was the final whistle celebrations when Di Matteo was celebrating and hugging. Now, from where I was, it looked reasonably genuine. A lot of people were saying that the players weren't into it at all with Di Matteo.
Well, the
he nearly knocked over Torres completely with
blindsided him.
Yeah. It's American football style barge.
But Torres just
stay on his feet, really.
Broken at the end of it, and he was getting a lot of praise for running about in the channels, and that's what it's come to for him. You know, he worked hard. He ran about in the channels. You know, they could have brought me on. I'd work hard and run about in the channels. I wouldn't do anything, but you know, I would work hard. My work ethic would be beyond reproach of any kind. I was kind of puzzled, actually. If you're in a game like that, you need a goal. Why do you bring on a striker whose confidence is shot to pieces, clearly afraid to even take possession of the ball at this stage?
Didn't Sturridge have a bit of a mare, though? That seemed to be the perception among the Chelsea fans around.
Even so, though.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, they won in the end, yeah. So you could argue it worked, but
I don't know, JT hasn't explained that one yet, but perhaps in the fullness of time. What about Napoli? Will they be back, James?
Well, Gazzetta's reaction this morning, their front page headline was, Napoli, thanks for trying. That sums up the mood quite well, is that they gave a really good account of themselves. They can go out of the competition with their head held high. They provided the competition with some of its best moments and certainly some of its best games this year. Going forward, it's quite an interesting set of circumstances because they went into this game in a formidable run where they really look like they're going to finish third and qualify for next year's Champions League. But on the other hand, that while you've got a situation where this run will bolster Napoli financially, if they qualify again next year, it will bolster them further financially. They don't need to sell their players. Will some of these guys look around now? I'm not thinking of Cavani because I think he's only been there for a year. He's building on what he's already done there. But Lavezzi and Hamsik in particular, they've been there for some time now. And particularly, I think Lavezzi might start looking for a new challenge. I mean, he's been mentioned as part of this Inter rebuilding project. He gave a big interview with Sport Week on Saturday where he invited them into his villa. Did you see this?
No.
He has this incredible villa on with a private beach, which he can never use because people always bring their boats around it and all that sort of thing. And what he was trying to say was he can never go out, he can never have a good time because of the suffocating sort of pressure that is being a footballer in Naples. So maybe that will come to bear. And if Napoli get a bid for him in the summer, they might actually think about accepting it.
I think it's worth mentioning as well that even though last night's game was splendid, brilliant game, and both teams contributed, obviously, ITV's coverage was so risibly awful that it pretty much spoiled it for me, and I think a lot of other people as well, if the comments being made on Twitter or anything to go by. In the commentary box, you had Clive Tilsley and Andy Townsend, whose unfettered cheerleading for Chelsea was astonishing, even by their lamentable standards. And then in the punditry box, you Adrian Chiles, who was again cheerleading for Chelsea and asking such inane questions and making such banal comments that I haven't seen that much murder in Roy Keane's eyes since he was standing over Alfie Haaland that time. It was embarrassing. Something needs to be done about it.
He was making stupid throwaway comments like, Chelsea will be fitter, won't they, when it came to extra time. I was like, why?
Quite. I mean, it's interesting also that, you know, people have been remarking that Sky have really upped their game since they had to make their enforced change, and they seem to be quite smugly satisfied with how they presented football for years and years, even though lots of people found it quite irritating. And ITV seem to be in a similar situation. I mean, presumably they're not going to have some kind of scandal that means that they're obliged to change all their staff. But it would be nice if they were to have a look at things and have a look at what people are actually saying and thinking and realise that their standpoint is not really reflecting what people want to see and how they want to see their football presented.
Shout out too to Didier Drogba for his magnificent piece of play acting where he threw himself to the ground holding his face without anyone having touched him, and then had a little peekaboo moment to see what was going on.
It was very sweet though, wasn't it?
It was embarrassing.
It was a disgrace.
But also, the, again, just harking back to the commentary, that was when, you know, prior to that, they'd kept making all these remarks about how the Italians were going to be cheating because it was part of what you'd expect from them. And then they suddenly were presented with this incredibly concrete example from one of the English representative teams, and they sort of went, oh dear, you know, they couldn't quite bring themselves to be as outwardly critical as
they were. Speaking of dirty tricks, did you see the Napoli officials before the game had complained that the heating in the dressing room had been turned up too high to the point that, you know, the players couldn't take it in there. So they informed UEFA and it took half an hour for them to sort out the heating.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah. Is there nothing this team won't stoop to. Well, there you go. Napoli 2 points behind Lazio. They play Udinese this Sunday night, another of their rivals, for a top three finish. Mention that because it's on ESPN.
Ooh, with you?
With moi.
Incredible.
All right, then. That's enough self-promotion for now. Part two follows very shortly. Now, a little bit more on the Champions League while we're on the topic. The midweek also saw Italy losing another team, Inter, going out against Marseille. And they thought they were through, and then that last-minute goal from Brandao, and awfully sorry. But to be honest, the competition might be better off without them. Amy, was it you saying this was a competition between two teams that stank the place out, and Marseille perhaps smelt a little bit less bad?
That's exactly what I said. No, you don't have to ask me anymore.
Brandao, yeah. I mean, that's a phenomenal story because, I mean, we talk about Man City welcoming Carlos Tevez back, someone who we thought that he would never play for City again, and now we're looking to him as someone who could perhaps revive their title challenge. Well, Brandao this time last year looked like he'd never play for Marseille again. He was accused of sexual assault, an allegation that he denied. Marseille dealt with that by sending him on loan to Cruzeiro, where he kind of bombed. But because they were doing so badly this year, they started the season so poorly, Marseille, they kind of last throw of the dice, brought him back. And, you know, he's now a hero. And that was the front page of L'Equipe yesterday. It was a heroic performance.
It was a one-way ticket back from Palookaville for Brandao. In this case, they go through. They're probably the team, apart from Apple and Nicosia, that most people want in the next round. And Inter prepare to basically completely revolutionise everything once again with Villas Boas this time seems to be the thing there. Although the fact that Mourinho still holds so much influence there, apparently he's undermining his former protege's potential appointment at every turn. It's all very exciting, isn't it?
Something quite incestuous about the sort of Mourinho, Ranieri, Villas Boas.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing that they were saying about Inter when they were knocked out was they used the taunt Mourinho used against all his rivals when he was Inter there, which was zero titoli. Because it's for the first time in seven seasons where Inter will not win any silverware. I mean, we already knew it was going to happen, but the cycle's over, the curtain's down. It's all change, please.
I think the interesting thing, though, is how they're going to implement these changes, because obviously a new coach will come in, but there's a lot of players there that you think need to change, and I don't know how much money is available or all that they can get away with spending, but it just seems that you looked at some of the players, like the really experienced heads. When you look at Brandao's goal, and the players who were at fault were Lucio and Walter Samuel, and you just think, hang on a sec, these are, you know, if you've got to go about replacing people like this is really a problem.
The whole money question at Inter is a difficult one. There's certainly no way they're going to make it into the top three this year, I think, barring a miracle. The draw anyway tomorrow, it'll feature all sorts of meaty clubs like Real Madrid, Barcelona and Bayern Munich, who did look as though they might have some trouble against the Swiss side Basel, but how wrong we were.
Well, it was a bit unfortunate that Basel's coach Heiko Vogel was presented with the fact that Bayern had scored 7 goals in the pre-match build-up and had kind of laughed it all off, saying, I have no fear that they can score 7 goals again in a single match, which obviously didn't look like the best thing to be saying afterwards. But I think really notable for Bayern have been under a lot of pressure. To have such a comprehensive win was great for them, but to have Ribery and Robin back in such fine form, I think makes a big difference to them.
Can they challenge the big Spanish sides, do you think?
Well, I mean, in some ways it's a microcosm of what goes on in the international scene, where Germany have been trying to just make that last little bit to make up the gap on Spain, and it's very hard. And I think you'd still favour the Spanish teams probably, but Bayern do look probably the best, the next best thing. And with Schweinsteiger coming back to fitness as well, though he didn't start against Basel, he's a very influential player for them, and will help a lot when they've got stiffer tests ahead.
All right. Let's dial up Sid Lowe in Spain now to get the Spanish perspective on that and more.
Hello, James. How are you?
Very well. Yourself?
Not too bad, thank you. Yeah.
Good. And then you're in a taxi, line not the best, so I'll crack straight on. First off, big win for Real, obviously. The draw coming up tomorrow. Spanish pretty confident, I imagine, about that.
Yeah, well, they're confident about their prospects for Real Madrid and Barcelona for the rest of the competition. Of course, one thing they're not confident about is the draw itself, because I think the one thing they don't want is Madrid and Barcelona to face each other now. Everyone would like them to avoid each other. The assumption is that if they do avoid each other, they'll end up meeting in the final, because most people in Spain, and I think I would probably broadly agree with this, believe that Madrid and Barcelona are the strongest sides in the continent at the moment.
All right, excellent. I mean, obviously, Bayern put down a bit of a marker themselves and amongst other teams, but actually no, really Bayern, yes. Mm. In other news, what's all this about this massive debt that the rather impoverished Spanish government is now calling in from similarly impoverished Liga clubs?
Well, first thing to say about that is that I'm not completely convinced that the Spanish government is calling it in or will call it in. Spanish clubs between them owe nearly €800 million to the Spanish taxman. Of course, it's not normally the kind of debt that the state wants to try and call in, because you end up with football fans up in arms acting as if it's terribly unfair that their club should pay the taxman. The situation in Spain, though, is such that I'm not sure that football fans would be particularly angry if the clubs were forced to pay right now. But there is another question, which is, can they pay? There's only four clubs that don't owe the taxman any money at all. Athletic Bilbao is one of them. Real Madrid is another. Everybody else owes the taxman. Now, you probably don't know this, but there's a great phrase that gets used in the sort of, I don't know what you've called, like the official propaganda of the Spanish inland revenue. And the phrase they use is, the inland revenue, somos todos. We're all the inland revenue. Now, seeing as we're all the inland revenue, I'd quite like Atletico Madrid to pay me their proportion of the money they owe, because they owe it to me.
Yeah, I quite understand that. Sid, as you say,
in fact, I might go down to the Calderon and rip a couple of seats out and take them home in lieu of payment.
Don't do that, Sid. Don't do that. As you say, there might have been an upcry in previous years from football fans saying, why should our club pay taxes, although it seems entirely reasonable that they should. However, now, given the kind of austerity measures being introduced everywhere else, it would be pretty understandable if the Spanish were up in arms about the Spanish clubs not paying, and particularly the rest of Europe, who are busy bailing out Spain amongst other nations, might wonder why the clubs are exempt to such austerity measures.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think this is going to be obviously, you know, far be it from me to go off the footballing beaten track and get down into economics. But of course, the imposition upon the Greeks to deal with things has caused a real kickback. What will happen if Europe imposes upon the Spanish state to make sure it recuperates its money? It does come down to the fact that certain debts are allowed, other debts aren't allowed. And for example, if I owe the taxman €50, you can bet your life I'd be around my house looking for it. Other clubs can owe them a fortune, because their social power, they haven't been reeled in before. They've come to agreements with the taxman. Atletico Madrid, they only got half of the money for Fernando Torres. Then they came to an agreement with the taxman. I think it's €15 million a year they're now paying back to the taxman. But they came to an agreement, as if any normal person can actually come to an agreement with the taxman. No, they've just got to pay up. I do think, though that the situation is such that the rest of Europe may start to impose. And also, as I say, Spanish football fans now probably won't have a huge amount of sympathy for their clubs, although ultimately I'm sure what would happen is that the club that's forced to pay back, their fans will say, well, why isn't this other club being forced to pay back as well?
Mm. But your understanding is that rather than this forcing a sea change in the landscape of the Liga, with clubs suddenly facing vastly different budgets, that in actual fact there'll be some kind of fudge somewhere along the line and nothing much will change.
Basing this on what's happened a million times before and things like this emerge every now and again, and the fact that the figures are so high is a product of the fact that nothing's changed. That some of the financial problems that are faced by lots of clubs in Spain, I think I'm right in saying that six or seven of the first division clubs have gone into the equivalent of administration, the Ley Concursal in Spain, which basically means, of course, they don't have to pay their debtors, and they are allowed to call in the people that owe them money. And nothing happens partly because there's no sporting penalties for the way that clubs behave. That is now changing. There is a new law which means that clubs will be forced to pay back their debts and will potentially face sporting penalties as well. But as I say, the cynic in me says, well, we've seen this before and nothing ever happens.
Never mind, eh? What's on the telly this weekend?
What's on the telly this weekend? Well, it's funny you should say that. The Spanish live game on Saturday night is Rayo Vallecano against Real Betis. The reason I'm speaking to you in a hurry in the back of the taxi is I've been down at Rayo Vallecano this morning, seeing how they work, seeing how they train, how they prepare games and stuff. And when you get the chance to see the work properly, you know, actually get talked through the mechanisms, the statistics that you use, the videos and stuff, it really is absolutely fascinating. And I have to say, I've come away from Rayo's training ground today massively impressed with Sandoval, the coach. And I already thought he was a good coach, but what I've seen this morning has just been astonishing. It's really very, very impressive indeed.
What's so different about what they do?
Well, I'm just going to jump out of the taxi and try not to have the door taken off, which, by the way, happened to Gerard Piqué the other day.
Ooh.
I don't know if you saw that. He he parked his car and got the door whipped off by a bus. That's another story. Well, the sheer depth of information, the detail in the videos they use, the way in which they prepare videos to explain moves to players. This is slightly less tangible, but the sort of sheer power of charisma, the presence of their coaches. So it's a very, very interesting setup with very limited resources as well.
All right, then. And also, I think Valencia taking on Athletic Bilbao, but we can't really say too much about that one because Bilbao are about to take on Man United, and that'll have happened by the time most people hear this.
Yeah, anyway. It's a pity, isn't it, that we can't talk about Athletic Bilbao and Man United till after the game. But I just hope it's as good fun as the first leg.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Sid, thank you very much for that. And look forward to catching up with you on Monday. Sidlo in Spain. Now, FA Cup, we mentioned, obviously, Chelsea at some length back in part one, and they're facing Leicester, the lowest-ranked team still in the competition in the FA Cup quarterfinals this weekend. Leicester will no doubt be hoping that Chelsea will be a little bit after the Lord Mayor's parade, and also a little bit leggy, you know, those old legs, 120 minutes of football Wednesday night, etc.
They'll need something because Chelsea haven't lost at home in the FA Cup to lower league opposition since 1991.
Really, Barry?
Really, yeah. I don't know much about Leicester. I haven't seen them play very often, but they have a good manager. It's difficult to see them getting past Chelsea, but again, it depends on how seriously Roberto Di Matteo and John Terry take this tie and where their priorities lie. And as you say, they may well be fatigued because there's no way you can play 120 minutes of such high-intensity football as they did last night without it taking its toll on any player, especially some of them who are, you know, pushing on a bit.
Plus, they have a huge game coming up midweek at the Etihad Stadium against Man City. The other quarter-finals, he said, moving on, unless anybody else wants to say anything about Chelsea-Leicester. I can imagine you... No, don't worry, James.
Leicester have had kind of quite a frustrating season because they spent like 11 million in the summer on I wouldn't say Premier League class players, but I mean Jermaine Beckford, Kasper Schmeichel, Neil Dans, etc. Beckford obviously has form as a former Leeds player of knocking Manchester United out of the FA Cup, so you know perhaps he can return the favour for Chelsea.
Yeah, perhaps so. In other quarterfinal news, Liverpool are facing Stoke, fresh from a pretty emphatic Tuesday night Merseyside derby triumph, 3-0, Barry, and this game was all about Steven Gerrard.
Certainly was. He put in one of his sort of trademark Roy the Rovers performances. While the victory was incredibly emphatic and a much-needed shot in the arm for Liverpool's season, it's difficult to know how much to read into it because David Moyes didn't seem to take it very seriously and has angered a lot of Everton fans by picking a below-strength team. He left several high-profile players on the bench. Tim Cahill, Jelovic, Osman, Hettinger were all rested, presumably. So, which would suggest his focus is on the FA Cup, which seems a bit odd because going into a Merseyside derby like that, half cocked at Anfield, just seemed an extraordinary call on his part. But I'm sure he had his reasons for it.
It was a night of milestones. So Steven Gerrard's 400th appearance for Liverpool, a decade for David Moyes, and perhaps the fact that in that decade he's won nothing. Might be why he's now eyeing up a cup run as potentially being that much more attractive. And he kind of hinted at that being the motivation afterwards when he said, well, we got a busy week. But yeah, it's something that I'm sure won't sit very happily with a lot of Everton fans. They are hosting Sunderland at Goodison Park on Saturday. course, Sunderland had beaten Arsenal 2-0 in the previous round, so...
Yeah, they were. They're obviously, I think that's quite a nicely balanced tie, Everton against Sunderland.
Yeah.
The only thing is Sunderland haven't beaten Everton in the last 15 attempts.
Oh.
But perhaps not as balanced as I thought.
They're pretty even in ability. Either team could win it on the day. It's a hard one to call, you know.
All right, let's not try and call it then. Liverpool-Stoke, how about that one then? Mm-hmm.
Well, anyone who sat through their goalless draw at Anfield in the league of January will be eagerly looking forward to this rematch. I mean, that game was traumatic for anyone who had to watch it. It was awful. I think they had one shot on goal each. I think so, yeah. If possibly. And it can't be as bad again, you would hope.
All right. Stoke are fresh from a giant killing campaign in the Cup, which has seen them put out the likes of Gillingham, Derby and Crawley Town. So this will be the kind of thing they're used to. And Tottenham, Bolton, what about that one then at White Hart Lane? Spurs, what's happened to them, James?
They've had quite an easy, well, you'd think an easy run of it up until now in the FA Cup. I think they played Cheltenham, Watford and Stevenage, but they made heavy weather of Stevenage. And,
well, twice, Stevenage twice.
Again, it's going to see whether these problems are resolved. Of you know, Spurs seem to be at their best when they have, you know, two kind of natural wingers, you know, in terms of Bale and Lennon. A bit like Bayern, you know, whenever they don't have Ribery or Robin or, you know, or both, that they kind of lose a bit of their fluency. So
Owen Coyle might sack this one off and just decide it's not worth it. Bolton have two very massive games coming up.
I was about to ask if Spurs were going to do the same thing then. Will either team turn up for this?
Yeah, it might be the case after you, sir, after you. Bolton have to play Villa on Tuesday and then Blackburn the following Saturday. They need minimum 3 and ideally 6 points out of those games to help their cause to stay up. They're one of 5 teams fighting to avoid 3 relegation places. And I would imagine the FA Cup is very, very low on their list of priorities.
I think Spurs have to take this one seriously. There's no way they can be lighthearted about this, given that the way that the atmosphere has changed in the last few weeks. I think when you look at overall at the bigger picture of Spurs, it was not that much of a surprise that they were going to hit a blip around this time. It was, you know, the games that they've gone badly for them, and not massive surprises. But they've got to react. I mean, otherwise, obviously, Chelsea have come back into some enthusiasm, as have Arsenal. And I think Tottenham really need to just get a win, however, and approach this properly so that they can get out of a little bad period.
It's an exciting lineup of quarterfinalists, that much is clear.
Okay, yeah, it's you know, without the Manchester clubs, without Arsenal, etc., it's a bit strange, but I like it because it's kind of unpredictable. You know, all of those teams are still in it, apart from maybe Leicester can and Stoke or
Bolton.
All right, it's winnable, but
yeah.
It's a bit like the Champions League quarterfinal draw, because everyone says, you know, oh, it's a crap Champions League issue. It's not. I mean,
no, they're different teams, but yeah.
I mean, historically speaking, I think there's like, yeah. Well, I'm not going to go there. I'm just not going to go.
I think for neutrals, it's pretty dull. But apart from possibly some Chelsea fans, there isn't a team in there that wouldn't love to win the FA Cup.
Mm-hmm.
This season, more than any, I think the FA Cup is just really in its death throes. It's suffering badly. The draws haven't helped. But I, for one, I would absolutely love if Sunderland won the FA Cup. I'm sure Everton fans would be absolutely thrilled to bits to win the FA Cup. Some Spurs fans, I have heard, turn their nose up. They're more concerned about finishing fourth or third.
I think after the season they've had, that Chelsea would be delighted to win the FA Cup.
I think there are plenty of teams in there.
There's anyone who's
Chelsea side who want silverware. I mean, even Spurs, I know they've got, you know, they've won, what, the FA Cup 8 or 9 times? Last time, 91. Be a good sort of, if Redknapp was to leave, it'd be a good send-off.
All right, then. Well, anyway, those are the FA Cup quarter-finals, and that is part two. Coming up in a second, we'll be looking at what's going on in the Premier League and maybe giving a shout-out to Fiorentina Juve too. Part three, here's some exciting news. Christopher Highland, and apologies if I pronounce that wrong, says, James, I was listening to the latest podcast on my way to work in Oslo. I thought I'd tell you about the Norwegian birthday song. You will recall that for Barry's birthday, Amy, on Monday, we were singing happy birthday in different languages. Anyway, the Norwegian birthday song doesn't follow the traditional tune. In fact, I think guest producer Ian's going to post a little link at the top if you want to hear it. I have got the lyrics here, but it's very nice. It's all about celebrating birthday, but apparently a completely different tune. Mm. How radical. In other post and tweet news, Anup Sudhendranath says, "Did you give podcast to the world, Guardian Sport?" Well, I'm not sure what he's referencing there. The rather unfortunate outburst by Sir Dave Richards in... Yes.
I was really disappointed because when I heard that he'd fallen into a swimming pool, I thought it was a big swimming pool, and I thought it was like a shallow...
Potentially with no water in it or something.
Yeah. It's crap.
Yeah.
I'm just mystified, James, by you mentioned earlier that apparently he wasn't inebriated.
Well, I don't know that for sure, but...
given what he actually said...
Yeah.
You'd need that as an excuse, really, wouldn't you?
You'd want to be. Yeah.
Well, he claims he said it in jest.
Yes.
Lost so, a bit in translation.
I don't know. I mean, it's a bit rich of him to accuse anyone of stealing football, the chairman of the Premier League, after what they've done in the
UK. After what he did for Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah. Mm.
And, yeah, exactly, his disgraceful tenure in charge.
But he explained that it had been misunderstood in a negative sense.
All right.
He clearly meant they stole it in a positive way, and the business about calling them liars as well. That was, yeah, all positive. So there you go. It's just one of those mistranslation things. I'm glad it's all blown over.
On that subject, David Conn has written a lot about Dave Richards in the past and the Premier League. Obviously, he had a good article in The Guardian. It's sort of tough going because the topic is quite dull. Just about how, well, the headline was FA raises white flag in 20-year fight for the soul of football. And it's the Tory sport minister, Hugh Robertson. I don't know if you remember, some months ago they had this kind of how can we fix football thing where various people were called in and parliamentary
select committee.
Select committee, that's the one.
Was John Terry invited? Or?
No, I don't think so. I think David Conn might have been, actually.
Really?
I think so. Anyway, they come up with all these things the FA needed to do and the Premier League needed to do. So the FA finally sort of, this is what we're going to do on the back of this select committee, submitted their document, hadn't agreed to do any of the things decided by the select committee, and Hugh Robertson just signed it off. So it was basically, as the headline in David Conn's article suggests, the FA finally waving the white flag going, we don't matter anymore, it's all about the Premier League. It's a pretty sad day for English football.
Well, that brings us on nicely to the Premier League, which is playing this weekend, Barry. You're going to be excited.
Seamless seg.
Yeah, nice. Wigan taking on West Brom. Very exciting, this. The Latics attempts to beat the drop. And they're not that far off, are they? They've only lost one in the last five, and you're getting all excited about their performance against Norwich. Can they bank another 3 points here?
But you say they've only lost one of their last five. They've only won one of their last 13.
Yeah, a cup half full, half empty, but yeah.
Well, West Brom have the best away record outside of any of the top three in the league.
Yeah.
Wigan haven't won at home since August. So all the signs would be pointing towards a West Brom victory. I can't remember what price they are, but they're a pretty generous odds under the circumstances. Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably worth a few quid.
What about their neighbours in relegation misery, Wolves, who are hosting Man United? Surely a glimmer of light there for Terry Connor?
No.
Oh.
The Wolves have lost their last six, and by Monday they'll have lost their last seven.
Right.
Almost certainly. I saw a story today that Gary Megson was being linked with the Wolves job, and that would sort of suggest it's a bit hard on Terry Connor, who's clearly out of his depth and thrown into the deep end. But I had a little chuckle to myself because Wolves fans sort of hounded Mick McCarthy out of the club, and it's a classic case of be careful what you wish for. If Gary Megson takes over, well, that's karma, I think.
His hair would blend very well with Wolves' colours. Like a Wolves' tie and Gary Megson's sort of ginger get-up. I like it.
Well, it's an interesting... you can tell you've spent some time in Italy there, James. Interesting perspective there. Wolves' last two games have seen them lose 5-0 to Fulham and 2-0 to Blackburn Rovers. So, would you care to put a number on how many United will score in this game?
Five?
Or a couple of numbers, if you prefer. In other Premier League this weekend news, Newcastle host Norwich. Newcastle, beginning to slip away from the European positions. That's the fear. Although they are so strong at home. You saw the Arsenal game. We haven't really talked about that. And yet another come-from-behind performance by the Gunners.
Yeah, it was a big result for Arsenal. And I thought Newcastle were good, though. They are a really much, much, much improved side this season. They can consider themselves obviously a little bit unfortunate in the timing of the match winner, but it was coming, so Arsenal probably did deserve to win that game. But I do think Newcastle look really... They're really nice to watch this season. And even though there was a bit of, you know, ranting about time wasting and so on, and they were much more practical after the break. In the first half, they really went for it. And Ben Arfa scored a delightful goal. He's really a nice player. So, yeah, I think well done for Newcastle this season. But they have still got quite a big job on qualifying for Europe. For sure.
What about Arsenal and their job of catching Spurs for third place? And why weren't these Arsenal players putting in this kind of shift beforehand, Amy?
It's really inexplicable. I mean, virtually everybody I know sort of sits there and thinks about the point when Spurs were 2-0 up at the Emirates a few weeks ago and it looked like an absolute disaster was on the cards. And it's very, very strange feeling that a season that threatened to be one of the most disappointing for a really long time suddenly feels very uplifting. There's still a long way to go, and in the next 10 games, I don't think anybody's silly enough to assume that Arsenal are going to just win all their games. They've still got to play Chelsea, they've still got to play Man City. So it's not a totally stress-free run-in, but they've definitely put themselves in a nice position. They look like a team completely reborn for reasons that nobody can put their finger on at all, basically.
I still find it kind of harsh when people say, you know, where was this fight, where was this passion before? Arsenal have had, you know, horrendous injury problems this year. When you're bringing on sort of Carl Jenkinson, who looks petrified, you know, you're not as they were in the beginning of the season, you can kind of understand that. Whereas I think now they look at full strength almost, you know, in terms of the 11s that they're putting out.
I think also you make a good point there, and having fullbacks again has made a real big difference. I think the return to form coincides with Arsenal getting natural fullbacks back, because it just didn't have the right kind of balance in the team at all when they were having to play sort of fourth and fifth choice centre backs as fullbacks. So particularly Bakary Sagna, who's been a terrific player, has made a really, really big difference.
Because, I mean, that Sagna-Walcott combination seems to be... They seem to go to that a lot. You know, I mean, Szczesny just seems to kick it up to Sagna or Walcott. They nod it down to each other and bomb on.
Barney Rono was making a very interesting series of tweets about this, saying that effectively what Arsenal are doing is playing a rarefied form of the long ball game, that Theo Walcott out on the wings now represents the real place where the dangerous ball arrives. So they've just taken the mixer and relocated it out to Theo Walcott on the wing and stuck it in there, and then he puts it in. So, interesting.
I'd agree with that completely. Yeah. They were doing it against Newcastle on Monday night. I went to the Milan game, and the press box is right on that right hand side. Well, for that first half, and it was always coming.
But mind you, that was where Mesba was playing, so you'd understand their willingness to target that area for sure.
His performance that game was astonishing.
I was surprised that wasn't the headline on every paper the next day. Man impersonates footballer.
Who is he?
They signed him in January from Lecce, completely left field kind of signing.
One of those signings that you think is all about plus Valenci, as they say, when they're trying to basically do a little bit of creative accounting to balance the books ahead of the end of the financial year.
Mm. Again, he's a kind of sign of this Milan side trying to rejuvenate by just stockpiling.
But he's not that young. He's 27 or something, isn't he?
Well, it's young by Milan standards.
I don't think that's true, actually.
No, I'm not going to get on that bandwagon, because they have done a lot of rejuwindows in the last three transfer windows.
He's an Algerian international, is that right?
Is he an international?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. Well, I hope not, for Algeria's sake, but I don't think I've ever seen such an astonishingly inept performance from a professional footballer.
I'm sure you have,
I don't know.
It was a surprise in such a big game.
And the fact that he came out for the second half was...
that was, again, really...
beggared belief.
It did. There you go. The vagaries of football, which is why it makes it such an exciting sport to watch. Well, that pretty much wraps it up for today. I did mention, though, Fiorentina-Juve, which... you know, over the years has been one of the classic grudge matches in Italy. I'm not sure if it still carries the same measure of vitriol that it once had, James, do you think?
Well, it started in the 80s, didn't it? In 81, 82, when I think...
Liam Brady penalty.
Yes. Yeah. And I think Fiorentina on the final day had a goal disallowed, dubiously as well. And then
this was basically Fiorentina about to win the title, which they never did. Hmm. And then Juve, they felt, stole it. And subsequent events maybe give a little bit of weight to their argument with a dubious penalty on the final day, which Liam Brady put away. And then, of course, they went and signed Roberto Baggio, which only made it worse.
And the thing, I think that was on the day that Juventus met Fiorentina in the UEFA Cup final.
Ooh.
Which is a second leg where Fiorentina were forced to play away from Florence because their fans had apparently caused some trouble in Turin, and they played in Avellino, where there's quite a strong Juventus contingent, and obviously they lost. And so I think they lost anyway. They certainly lost the tie. Bad blood, but Fiorentina have been very kind of in a funk this season. They thought by getting rid of Mihailovic, the sort of bad atmosphere around the club would go, because no one thought he was the right person for the job after Prandelli. They played terrible football, but since then, nothing's improved, even under Delia Rossi. And there's suggestions that it's because the players in the dressing room don't show any kind of commitment at all. They're either overweight or they're out partying at 4 a.m. in Florence, where they've almost done like, you know, fans ringing in newspapers saying, I've seen them out. There's one incident with Alessio Cerci, who was once linked with Man City, who apparently turned up to a restaurant in his Maserati, parked it outside on double yellows, and the parking attendant came out and said, can you move your car, please? You can't do that. And he said, I'll eat first. And that's the sort of, that's become sort of symbolic of Fiorentina's season.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about, Mario, I saw your friend Lucky Moore tipping Fiorentina in this game.
I saw that, yes.
Yeah. And I think part of his rationale was that Amaury is going to be playing against his former club, the club that treated him so shabbily, the Brazilian stroke Italian in inverted commas forward, and again forward in inverted commas, because he hasn't scored a goal since, what, April last year?
Amaury obviously had those terrible droughts, if you like, and then he went on loan at Parma last year and scored some ridiculous goals, and he hasn't provided that boost for Fiorentina. I mean, the main blow for them, that they've struggled scoring goals all season, but Jovetic, he's hurt and will probably start from the bench, so I don't know if I'd be backing Fiorentina in the way that Luki is.
Mm. Yeah, interesting, though. Interesting.
Would you reckon they're worth the punt, Jimbo?
Well, Fiorentina, no, absolutely not.
Well, I mean, another part of Luki's rationale seems to be the fact that while nobody expects them to win, they have to come good eventually, which is not the greatest gambling strategy in the world, I have to say. But, you know, I wish them all the best.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Nice to see a mention for Fiorentina.
He mentioned you as well.
He did. He mentioned me and ice creams.
Mm.
Oh, and also, can I say, can I salute whoever it is has found old episodes of Gazzetta Football Italia, which for years have been completely invisible, and somebody stuck them out on YouTube.
Really?
It's really, really remarkable and scary.
Is there full episodes on there?
Well, I haven't watched it all the way through, but there's certainly the start. It seems to be maybe the first part of various episodes. They're all from 1995, so presumably somebody back in 1995, using old-fashioned VHS technology, has recorded a whole series and has now decided to unleash them upon the world in some hideous time capsule-esque experiment.
I used to watch it every Saturday morning religiously with my dad.
All right.
And he'd sort of sit there, you want to get yourself a job like that. I never did.
I always remember, I think it was a skit you did with Gazza, which is like Coronation Street inspired something at the time.
Right.
It's like about Deirdre.
No, Gazza didn't appear in that one.
No?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Wearing an outside pair of glasses. I have no idea what the punchline was, if indeed it featured a punchline. But there is plenty of Gazza. There's a great one that this fella just put up with Gazza, who just shaven himself bald. And what, at the time, we took to be a quirky, playful gesture, but I now realise represents a very serious cry for help that went sadly ignored by a presenter. riffed on it.
Is there any in bed with Paul Ince sort of scenes?
Yeah, and on camera as well sometimes.
Is this Football Italia or something else?
Yeah. Football Italia. Anyway, well, there you go. Happy days. Almost as happy as these ones, indeed. Mm. That's it for today's Football Weekly Extra. But we'll be back on Monday, I'm thinking. I'm not sure who's on board then, but I'm sure it'll be a tip-top panel of pod. Have a super weekend, everyone, and we'll speak to you then.
During March, The Guardian's podcasts are sponsored by audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/freedownload to find out more.